Hey, TYT, this is Nomi Const. We're on Capitol Hill talking to a progressive congressman, a liberal progressive congressman who's been out there at the forefront making a name for himself in his first couple of years in Congress. We have Congressman Ruben Gallego from Arizona's 7th District, which is the Phoenix, Tempe surrounding areas, a very progressive district.
Probably so.
State that I will say once turned blue, a little purple now, but most people think is very conservative. How do you do it in that state?
Well, I think, one, it is a purple state. I think it's only going to turn blue if we actually do the work to do it. And also, we need to give reasons for people to come out and vote. And the mistake that's been done in the past is that somehow they believe that Arizona is just going to turn blue by, time. And it just doesn't work that way. But every time we've actually had a progressive ballot measure, for example, in Arizona, by popular vote, it always wins. And so that's why I do believe the state is actually more progressive than it shows. But largely our politics and our politicians haven't actually followed that track, which also, I think, reduces the amount of people that come out and vote because they don't feel they have any reason to come out and vote at all.
President Trump just decided that he was going to end the DACA program. Mm. And there's 6 months for this process to go through.
Right.
You're in a district. Your district is heavily made up of a lot of Dreamers, Latinos. Yeah. This is Arizona. You're close to the border. These issues are incredibly divisive when it comes to the parties. But for those of you who've been in Arizona, there's a lot of industries that rely on undocumented workers and, families who really invest in these communities. Have you noticed that there are people across the party lines that are coming out and saying, we stand with the Dreamers?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it. But now the question is, are you going to do anything about it? Every time something like this happens, you always see the Republicans that come out and say I really pray for them, or I'm really worried about them, or I really wish something would happen. Well, shut up and do something about it. And we have the opportunity to do it. Let's bring a bill to the floor and vote. And for me, this is personal. This is not just an issue of policy. Dreamers are basically part of my family. They've been, friends of mine since I moved to Arizona. I just can't imagine seeing them deported from the country that they only know. And, this isn't a policy issue. This is really a human rights issue. And what an embarrassment, I think, it's going to be for this country looking into the future if we deport 800,000 people. I mean, the closest thing I have akin that's close to this right now in semblance, I would say, is the fact that when we interred so many of our Japanese citizens, and the fact that we're going to allow this to happen again is disgusting.
The timing of this announcement came right after Joe Arpaio, the sheriff of Maricopa County, was pardoned.
Right.
Do you see those two actions playing into each other?
Oh, I see them all playing into each other. His comments on Charlottesville, where he basically said all sides are equal, when clearly there was neo-Nazis that were involved and should be condemned. And then Sheriff Joe Arpaio, another racist that I fought, most of my adult life, and he pardons. And then this, and in my opinion, what he essentially is doing is, one, reminding us the president is a racist. I don't understand why people don't want to accept that. Every time I talk to the media about this, they're shocked that I'm even bringing it up. But after so much evidence, we just should accept that he is. But two, he needs to play to his base, and that's what he's doing. This is all play to his base because he can't deliver on anything. He's not going to be able to deliver on the wall. And this is his way to kind of throw red meat at that group of people that are have always been able to sustain his campaigns.
My sense, and I'm from Tucson, is that Arizonans have a different understanding of this wall than most Americans. Can you describe that a little bit, the cultural difference between the national conversation about the wall and the local conversation about the wall?
So it's interesting. I mean, we have a lot of people that move in from the Midwest to Arizona, and they're the ones that are, and they live in, for example, in my area, northern my area, which is about 200 miles from the border, right? And they're still for a border wall without the concept of what actually is a wall down on the border. I've never been there. But the people that have lived there and are people like myself and yourself that have, grew up in that culture, the wall is a barrier between a border culture that's been going on for, more than 300 years now. And it's an insult to, a friendship that has been going strong through thick and thin now for, more than 150 years. And the idea that we're going to just throw a wall in the middle of the desert and we think that that's actually going to bring any security is even dumber. And for us that live on the border, we know that that doesn't help any because it's not going to create more security. All you're really doing is just wasting money. And you're doing it basically because it's easier to say I want a wall than to say I hate Mexicans. And that's like the subtext of what Donald Trump and his supporters are saying, right? And they're just using like this, you know, idea as a way to basically say that.
A symbol.
A symbol, right.
What kind of effect is the ending, the termination of DACA going to have on the economy?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to remember, everyone thinks about, it's about 860,000 people. And these people, they're not kids, they're young men and women now. They have jobs, they're teachers, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're homeowners, they're business owners. But it's not like they're just there themselves. Many of them are married, many of them have kids. So you're talking potentially up to 1.2 million people, both U.S. citizens and non-U.S. citizens, are going to be affected. And you're going to deport them. They're going to take their jobs, their family, their knowledge, all the investment we have put in them, and they're going to go. And it's going to cause, I would say, a recession, definitely in Arizona and other parts of the country. But the bigger problem, I think, is the moral recession it will cause among us as Americans. The idea that we allow that to happen in this modern age, the idea that we allow the mass deportation of, you know, innocent human beings, I think it's something that's going to be a stain on this country that we will probably never be able to get over. And we could get over the economics, but if we do that, we're going to take a, you know, we're going to drive a stake through the idea of what American values are. And I don't think we could ever recover from it.
But the truth is, you know, cities like Tucson and Phoenix and other parts of Arizona are very reliant on whether it's the wall, the border wall. Mm-hmm. And blocking Mexicans from coming over and just contributing to our economy. They come on vacation.
They have
second homes. You know, I've seen some of the stats on this that, you know, even over spring break, the economy in Tucson booms astronomically just because people are coming over and it's easy to get across and back and forth. That's just one aspect of it. But those who've really invested in these communities, I mean, they're part of the infrastructure of the state of Arizona, not to mention Texas, you know, California, and New Mexico, and Nevada, and other parts of the Southwest. I mean,
they're part of this country, and you're basically trying to take a portion of this country and send it somewhere else. And I can't imagine my life without my friends that I've known that are dreamers, and you know, I've employed them on my campaigns. I've you know, gone on vacation with them. I mean, they're part of my family, and the idea that we're going to deport them is just disgusting. I just can't imagine how this country could ever look at itself with pride again if we do something like that.
So the question I have for you is, as a congressman who's in the minority, and we're dealing with a president who doesn't get along with his own party most often. How does obstructionism work in today's world? I mean, we're seeing protests everywhere. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem, hate to be a Debbie Downer, but it doesn't seem to actually affect Trump's decision-making. It seems to almost, you know, make him more upset, and he does something every single day. Where's the line? Where does obstructionism work, and where does it not work?
Well, you can't look at policy and politics, you know, as if everything is a nail and the only answer is a hammer. You know, it's sometimes you basically have to look at a situation and see where the other side is. And if the other side, I mean, the Republicans, are within, you know, internal turmoil, your job is to go in there and to cause more turmoil in the minority and make them either fight themselves more or even within the outside politics, be more embarrassed from their own base. So the protests and the activism does work. If you look at, for example, the health care bill, if it wasn't for one or two stupid moves by Speaker Ryan and one other member, MacArthur, the bill barely passes out of the House. And that's because not because we were geniuses here in the House. It was because of the grassroots activism out there, the people going to town halls. We should have done a lot more. I was a little disappointed in the Democratic caucus. Me and a couple of members tried to start this Adopt a District movement where we would go and to a Republican district and have a town hall because these members wouldn't.
When they show up.
and we encourage leadership to also do the same, and they just would not get on the bandwagon for that kind of stuff because in their minds, it's a step too far. And in my mind, when you're basically, you know, reordering 1/6 of the U.S. economy and affecting the health insurance of potentially 180 million people, there is no step too far. And that's what's going to have to also happen now we're dealing with DACA. We have to go to the next step, which is we have to start putting pressure on Republicans to charge a discharge petition. I think Democrats are going to have to go into Republican districts and have town halls where we rally activists to basically put pressure on these moderate Republicans to vote to protect the Dreamers. You know, if we don't do these kinds of things, then what is this party for? Like, it makes zero sense at this point. Then we might as well just, you know, roll up and all call ourselves moderate Republicans at that point. And, you know, if we can't defend DACA recipients, it's a very sad statement as a caucus.
And the reality is that the Democratic Party, is something we cover extensively, is it's going through quite a transition right now. Lost right. over 1,100 seats in 9 years, not to mention many local seats.
Yep.
From a state like Arizona, where there is so much red territory and, mm-hmm. and there's little blue pockets, what do you see the path for? I mean, you ran, you were young when you ran, you yeah. were in the legislature, you defied, you were in a heated primary for your congressional yep. seat. What advice would you have for other folks out there who want to get involved but don't see a lot of blue spots on the map, and those blue spots that they see right. are held by people who've been there for a very long time?
Yeah, and you know, when you know, you talk about like losing seats and losing all these, you know, assembly seats, city council seats, all that stuff. You know, Arizona actually has been on the trend the other way, and we've been very lucky that way. And the way we did it is we looked at the map, especially after SB 1070. A lot of us young Latino activists looked at the map, and we started seeing these trends where we had these you know, Republicans that were pro SB 1070 in these Democratic Latino districts. And we decided as a community and as activists that we're not going to let that happen anymore. Wherever there was a Latino district, we were going to get the Latino vote out, and that person, whether they were Latino or not, was going to have to be pro-Latino first, and then Democratic second. And now what I've seen switch is from the activism of anti-Arpaio and anti-SB 1070, now you're seeing a very new movement where it's more progressive, whereas now we want, you know, okay, now we've taken these seats from these Republicans, now we want those seats not just be Democrats, we want them to be progressive. So you actively have to find every opportunity to fill a spot. And I think if you're a young person in a red state, it's actually going to be easier because there's less of that, you know, old guard infrastructure there that's going to stop you. I fought a lot of that old guard infrastructure and I won, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. And you can really make your way. But, you know, if there's a school board race, we have to have a body in there. If there's a city council race, you have to have a body in there. Anything that there's any kind of elected position anybody runs for, we should have somebody running there. And that's how you start building the bench. And if you even just took an example of the city of Phoenix, we switched from a majority Republican city council within 6 years to a Democratic city council. And that's because there was an active effort by progressive groups and Latinos to make sure that we were going to do that.
And when Donald Trump went there to give his speech yeah. just a couple of days ago, they felt it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The turnout was, we had more people outside protesting Donald Trump than there were inside.
We saw the pictures.
Yeah.
the fake pictures and yeah. the real pictures.
It was crazy.
All right. Thank you, Congressman Ruben Gallego from Arizona 7th District. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.